So I think it's important to create an environment where your employees feel that they're challenged, that they're learning, that they're given responsibility, and needless to say, that they're treated fairly.
Hey, welcome back. It is so great to be back with you here at Future Proof. Great anytime, but this week in particular, I don't know why I'm in a good mood, but what the heck, I'll take it, right? Bill Sheridan here. I am your host. This is episode number 171. Glad you're here. Another good one for you this week. You know what's cool? Okay, here's what's cool. I was looking up some analytics for our podcast, our little podcast here the other day. Some numbers, some data. You know, everyone wants data these days, right? Downloads, demographics. Who's listening, Bill? How many are listening? Platforms, locations. Give it to us. Numbers, numbers, numbers. I'm not sure what to do with half of these stats, but it's all interesting. It's all interesting. And here's a stat that I found kind of cool, right? There are 195 countries on Earth. And our little podcast here has been downloaded in 115 of them. Pretty cool. You know, we're global, right? What was it? ZZ Top? Was it ZZ Top said, you know, we're bad. We're nationwide, right? Yeah, I think that's what it was. I don't know what that means. Anyway, I get, and you know, like these stats, I'm not sure what any of that means, but I thought it was pretty cool nonetheless. So anyway, listen, this week's show is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses, dozens of instructors, unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. Okay, so here's the thing, right? Finding guests for the show, most of the time, takes a fair amount of work. I figure out who I want to talk to, and then I start chasing them down. And a lot of times that ends up being a pretty long chase, right? Phone calls, emails, trying to get something scheduled. And it can take a while just to get an interview on the calendar. And that's before the real work begins, right? And then other times, not as frequently, but every now and then, a show just kind of falls into your lap. And this was one of those times, this show this week. I was trying to think recently of who I knew, who I could talk to about our profession's pipeline, right? The flow of new CPAs into the profession and what awaits them once they get here. And then I got an email from this guy named Jerry McGinnis, who had just released a new book titled Advice for a Successful Career in the Accounting Profession, subtitled How to Make Your Assets Greatly Exceed Your Liabilities. Because I guess, you know, what's a book about accounting and finance without a few accounting and finance puns, right? Anyway, right away, that title kind of got me interested, right? I think we're all trying to figure that one out, how to make this profession a bit more attractive to young folks just starting their careers. That was actually the gist of an event that was held late last year. It was kind of a virtual fireside chat, quote unquote, as part of the AICPA's Accounting Scholars Leadership Workshop and Accounting Profession Diversity Symposium. And what they were trying to do there was start a conversation about how to strengthen professional skills and understanding of the possibilities and benefits of becoming a CPA and joining the profession. Panelists for that discussion were AICPA President and CEO Barry Melanson, Sue Coffey, who heads the AICPA's Public Accounting Division, and Kimberly Ellison Taylor, who's a former AICPA chair, a former Maryland Association of CPAs chair, and current chair of the National Commission on Diversity and Inclusion. Freelance writer Sarah Avaska was listening in, and she shared five key takeaways that she got from that conversation. And she did so in an article that she wrote recently for the Journal of Accountancy. So here's what she wrote. She says, there is no single career path, right? A career in accounting is not linear. It can take people through myriad opportunities once a person earns his or her CPA. Though working in public accounting and for public accounting firms is intellectually and financially rewarding for many, it's not the only career path. Accountants today are sitting in key positions in corporate boardrooms, conducting high-level government audit work, and leading the growing field of environmental, social, and governance work where CPAs help identify businesses' social impact. That's number one. Number two, CPAs thrive in a changing and complex world. The educational and experiential foundation of CPAs prepares them to meet the never-ending challenges delivered by today's complex global economy. When the US-based AICPA and the UK-based Chartered Institute of Management Accountants joined forces in 2017, it strengthened CPA's ability to advise in global boardrooms and specialize in areas like supply chain management and a whole lot more. Number three, CPA evolution will diversify the profession. All right. The leaders at this event also spoke about how the profession is evolving and, in response, how the CPA exam is evolving as well. The CPA Evolution Initiative, this is a joint effort between the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy and the AICPA, is transforming the CPA licensure model to recognize the rapidly changing skills and competencies the practice of accounting requires today and will require in the future. The initiative will include a revised model that will allow for the flexibility to add or remove disciplines to reflect the reality of practice and protect the public interest. Number four, students should prioritize the CPA exam. There was also practical advice at this event for students. Time required to study for the exam is what research points to as a key challenge for many potential CPAs. So taking the exam right after finishing school, probably the way to go. And number five, different backgrounds are embraced. The AICPA's 2019 Accounting Graduates Supply and Demand Trends report said that approximately 16% of CPAs in accounting and finance functions at US CPA firms in 2018 were an ethnic minority. This is the best metric that the AICPA has available since demographic information is omitted from exam scoring. However, the panelists said there is still much work to do to improve diverse representation within the profession. Many firms are looking to strengthen their organizations with talent that better reflects the nation and world, and that includes ethnic and racial diversity. Firms and organizations need to make sure they have supports in place for those who may be the first in their families to hold professional jobs or who had to work in order to finance their undergraduate studies. Again, and that's an end quote there, by the way. Again, some thoughts, great advice there for young professionals from a J of A article titled A Bright Future Ahead for Young CPAs. That was written by Sarah Ovaska. And my guest this week offers some additional thoughts of and advice really of his own. Again, he is Jerry McGinnis. Jerry is a former managing partner at KPMG's Philadelphia office who is now an executive in residence who supports the accounting program at Rowan University in New Jersey, where he helps prepare students for their transition from academia into the workforce. Jerry and I, we sat down recently and talked about, you know, the types of advice that he's offering young professionals these days, including the importance of working with your strengths and embracing change and avoiding burnout, all big topics right now. And he offered some thoughts also for all of us veterans in the profession, you know, how we can best welcome new folks into the profession and how we can keep them here once they arrive. So good talk this week about a topic that's on everybody's mind these days. Here is my conversation with Jerry McGinnis. Jerry, welcome. And by the way, congratulations on the book. So let me make sure I get the title right. Advice for a Successful Career in the Accounting Profession, how to make your assets greatly exceed your liabilities. Well, that's played there, by the way, with the title. That was great. Written most obviously, I guess, for young professionals, which raises the obvious question for me, why accounting for you, right? What drew you to the profession and what keeps you jazzed about it?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me, Bill. That is the correct title of the book. Just real quick, you and your listeners may be interested to know that the title of the book originally was How to Make Your Assets Greatly Exceed Your Liabilities, subtitle Advice for a Successful Career in the Accounting Profession. And my publisher, Wiley, said, Jerry, we think we'd like to flip it because we want it to be very clear to the prospective purchaser what this book is about. And with the title the other way, we're afraid they might think it's about investing versus accounting.
Ah, that's a good
point. I defer to their good judgment and experience in that regard. But why accounting for Meadville? I mean, honestly, I got out of my alma mater, St. Joe's, in the late 1970s. And any of your listeners who were old enough or contemporaries of mine, baby boomers, may recall that the period of the 1970s when I was in high school was a period where there was high unemployment, a lot of inflation. It was kind of a challenging time in this country, the Carter years. And so I personally, like many of my contemporaries, was very concerned about finding a field where stability was going to be there and employment was going to be high. And so like a lot of people, that was kind of the path I went down. I'd heard accounting was a great field to kind of get and maintain a job. I'd love to tell you that I pursued my passion, which is what I advise readers to do in my book. But the truth is I was very pragmatic. And I guess I was fortunate because as I got into it, I found that I really did enjoy the work. It was challenging. It was interesting. I met a lot of great people, and I did wind up making a career of it.
So what got you thinking that a book like this is needed at this particular time?
Yeah, thanks so much for asking. So really the catalyst for the book was when I retired from KPMG a few years ago, I had an opportunity to get involved with a local university here in Southern New Jersey where I live called Rowan University. Mm-hmm. And my role there is their title, not mine, but they call it an executive in residence. So what does that mean? I'm not on the faculty. I don't teach, but I do go into the classroom quite frequently to give guest lectures on topics like ethics, careers in accounting, some other topics. So I also chair their accounting advisory board. Mm-hmm. They're kind enough, Bill, to provide me an office on campus. And at least pre-pandemic, I was probably over there 6-8 hours a week on average, kind of volunteering my time to support their accounting program. A natural byproduct of being on campus that much is the students sort of figure out you're there and you get that email or that tap on the shoulder in the hallway, hey, can I come talk to you? And I'm happy to do that. I mean, that was one of the goals I had really was to kind of strive to be a resource to the students. So over the years, I met with dozens and dozens and dozens of accounting students. Mm-hmm. And while they're each unique and you try and listen to what's on their mind and be helpful to their particular situation, after a while, you realize there are clearly some recurring themes, right? Mm-hmm. And one day about 3 years ago, I met with a student. They left my office. I leaned back in my chair and said, I think that's about the 50th conversation I've had about the 150-hour requirement. And that was when the light bulb went off. And I said, you know, I wonder if there's an opportunity to put down on paper some of the advice I'm trying to share with the students in a fashion that could be leveraged a little more broadly. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the idea. I started writing. I was probably my own worst enemy. You know, I'd write a chapter, I'd put it down and not pick it up for 6 or 8 weeks because I was doing some other things. And nobody knew I was working on it. So I had no deadline. I had nobody like coming to me saying, where's your draft? But as I got into it, I realized that it was certainly a resource potentially for college students. I was effectively trying to answer many of the questions they had been asking me. Mm-hmm. But I realized it could also be a book that could maybe be helpful to young professionals, early career folks, a group that I define as maybe in that first 5, 6, 7 years of their career where they're hopefully developing some good formative habits. So really the meat of the book is section 2, which is about 9 chapters, which focuses on that early career professional. And I wound up kind of rounding it out with a section 3 that is a few chapters that arguably is potentially relevant for folks a little further along in their career. So there's a chapter on how to avoid burnout. There's another chapter on how to make good career transition decisions. So should I stay? Should I leave? A framework to kind of think about that. Yeah. And of course, the first section, as I alluded to, is focused on the college student studying accounting. That's about 6 chapters.
That's all stuff that everybody's talking about these days. So that's really great. I want to get back really quick just to the title that kind of piqued my curiosity. So that subtitle, How to Make Your Assets Greatly Exceed Your Liabilities. I mean, it seems to point to a bit of a focus on strengths-based career growth, right? Like focusing in on your strengths. True? I mean, why is that particularly important here in this profession?
Yeah. Well, thank you again for a great question. So your instincts are good there, right? We all have strengths and weaknesses. And I'm a big believer in just achieving your full potential, right? So, you know, we all have talents and the opportunities to develop those talents. And listen, we all have development needs. I mean, I know I have them. I work with some great people in my career. And whenever we did performance reviews, we would talk about things they were doing well, but we would also talk about improving on those development needs. I don't like to call them weaknesses. Mm-hmm. So I think the title of the book, the subtitle, was a little bit of a play on that. Like, let's take those strengths we all have and make them even better, stronger, develop them. And let's try and minimize those liabilities, those weaknesses, or overcome them. And I tried to make the book feel very practical advice. You know, it's all the things that are not in their textbook, right? I talk about real world tips, suggestions, advice. Really, a lot of the book is just lessons I learned during my career, maybe the hard way, and trying to put that out there in a way that will be helpful to the audience.
So what are some of those, particularly for, you know, in the meat of the book, the early career young professionals? Give me an example of, you know, some real world advice or pieces of advice that you're putting forward out there. What do you think is particularly important for young professionals to know nowadays?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And there's so many things, but maybe just a couple quick examples. So I have a chapter on, it's chapter 14, actually, in the book. It's called Relationships, Relationships, Relationships. And in the first paragraph, I make the analogy to the real estate world, right? Where you'll often hear location, 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 implying that, you know, success in real estate is all about buying a place in a prime neighborhood that's going to appreciate in value over time. And so in accounting, and it could be public accounting, it could be private accounting, government, nonprofit, academia, relationships are incredibly important. And I think we all need to be working on kind of developing and enhancing those relationships from day one. During my career, I observed many people that did not make that a priority. Mm-hmm. And then 10, 12, 15 years in, they needed to make a job change and they didn't have a group of people they could leverage. And it's not just about when you're changing jobs, right? We all know that there are many opportunities to kind of benefit from mutual relationships. So I talk about the importance in that chapter from a practical standpoint of really developing relationships from early on and some tips and advice on how to do that. I have another chapter. It's called Embrace Change. Technology is your friend. And we all know that technology is moving at light speed. The pace of change is accelerating. The accounting profession has been particularly impacted by that. You right. hear horror stories about how artificial intelligence and robotics are going to eliminate jobs. I just say in the book, I don't believe that, you know? I grew up in a world where we started with pens and paper. Everything was manual. And all of a sudden, this wonderful thing came along called the PC, and then eventually the Excel spreadsheet. And you would think if anything would eliminate jobs, it would be that kind of automation. And yet there are more accounting professionals today than there were when the Excel spreadsheet first came to market. So, you know, who can predict the future? I'm not sure, but I think by embracing change and taking advantage of some of these technological improvements, accountants, CPAs are putting themselves in a position to add even more value for their employers and create even more opportunity from their own career growth perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard somebody just recently refer to it as AI versus IA, right? So AI, artificial intelligence, the technology that's coming along and automating a whole lot of stuff, versus IA, which he says is intelligence augmented, right? So in other words, his point was we should be looking at these technologies as things that can augment what we do, right? It's not coming along to replace what we do, but we kind of work side by side with these pieces of technology. Let them do what they do really well, and we can focus on the higher value-added stuff that technology can do. But back to your point, relationships, right? Humans interacting with one another. And that's really kind of where our sweet spot is.
Yeah, totally agree. Good points. And, you know, just not to dwell on this, but one other chapter I have in there that I think illustrates kind of the practical real world advice is it's a chapter called Have a Value Creation Mindset. Mm-hmm. And what I describe in there is that, in my experience, a lot of employees, again, whether it be public accounting, private industry, they come to work and they sort of have a check the box mentality that I'm going to show up, I'm going to do the tasks my employer has asked me to do, maybe I'll try and do them well, but they're not necessarily thinking like an owner of a business would think or an entrepreneur might think, right? If it were your business, Bill, or my business, we would come to work every day thinking about how can I create more value, right? For my clients, for my people.
Yep.
How can I make this a better place? And when you do those things, believe me, the money, the promotions will follow. But so I kind of advise in the book, like, put that first, right? Create value and you'll have a great career. So think like an owner is kind of one of the practical pieces of advice I give.
There you go. That's really good advice. I'm curious if you've gotten any feedback either from young professionals or from like accounting educators, folks who are preparing these folks for a life in accounting. What kind of feedback have you gotten so far?
Yeah, thanks for asking. And as a quick aside, you know, one of the pieces of advice I give in the book is always ask for feedback, right? Mm-hmm. Don't necessarily wait until it's provided. People are busy and you're going to benefit if you routinely ask for feedback. So I try to follow my own advice and I've been asking for a lot of feedback. And I think it's generally been pretty positive. So a number of universities have asked me to come out and speak with their students, and they've organized like book signing events. I just had a call from a professor at a local university the other day. He's buying 100 copies of the book. He wants me to come down and speak with their students, take their questions, and then sign some books. I've had a lot of interest from universities of all sizes, but also, as you and I were chatting about informally before the podcast today, accounting-oriented organizations, right? So state CPA societies like yours, organizations like Beta Alpha Psi, NABA, I'm going to be speaking at their annual convention in June. So anyone who's sort of interested in the pipeline of the profession has expressed a lot of interest. And then the third group would be firms, really firms of all sizes, from the big four on down. If you think about it, for years, firms have gone out to campus to recruit, and they bring their goodie bag of t-shirts, hats, water bottles. Why not give out the book, right? It's a real practical resource for the students.
Right.
And also some firms, I think, are thinking about using it in their internal training programs, particularly for that early career professional.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fantastic. Now, another thing that kind of interests me was the book closes with what you call 50 questions that are meant to kind of challenge readers on how they can best achieve their potential. What are some of those questions? What should your professionals be asking themselves?
So just a little background on how that section came to be. When I had a draft manuscript that was pretty far along, I thought, gosh, let me get some feedback on this. And I wound up sharing it with a group of students, right? The potential readers and early career professionals. And I got some really good input. I also shared it with some academics. And one of the professors at Rowan, actually the chair of the accounting program there, said, Jerry, I love the book, but it ends sort of abruptly.
Mm-hmm.
And the last chapter in the book is focused on the importance of giving back. And it does kind of end. I won't agree abruptly necessarily, but you know, it ends, right? And so the 50 questions afterwards section was added in response to that comment in an attempt to create almost like a summary of the book mm-hmm. in the form of questions to the reader. Mm-hmm. And it's really summarizing each chapter. So like we just talked about the chapter on have a value creation mindset. The couple questions in the feedback section dealing with that chapter are, do you routinely solicit feedback from those you work with? And then what suggestions can you offer to improve the current state at your employer? In the chapter on technology, embrace change, technology is your friend, I have a couple questions there. Do you always make it a point to get out in front of a change cycle? Do you believe that change creates opportunity? So they're really intended to be thought-provoking and kind of summarizing some of the content in the book. Wiley has created a website where you know a reader can go and access the 50 questions and actually have it converted into like a laminated card that could be used as a bookmark.
Oh, there you go.
I don't know if people were doing that, but that was the idea behind it.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. So Now, of course, talent, I think you alluded to this earlier. It's at the top of everybody's mind in the profession today, how to attract and retain the best and the brightest minds. And I know the book was kind of written with young professionals in mind. I'm kind of curious, what kind of advice would you offer employers in this area, right? Based on what you know about young professionals and how they build their careers, what kind of advice would you give an employer today who's looking to hire one of these folks and really would like them to stick around and make a difference in their careers?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I'm actually in a position to maybe offer some kind of real world advice on that. One of the other things I'm doing in this phase of my career is serving as an advisor to an accounting firm.
Yeah, there you go.
And we talk about talent all the time and talent retention, talent acquisition. But I think, you know, when I was a young professional, the mindset of employers and firms was very different. You know, it was, we're going to do whatever it takes and, you know, we're going to work you pretty hard. And if you don't like it, you can always leave because there'll be a body behind you, right? Nowadays, I think the equation has changed a little bit and employees have a lot of clout, particularly as the great resignation rages on. So I think it's important to create an environment where your employees feel that they're challenged, that they're learning, that they're given responsibility, and needless to say, that they're treated fairly. I talk in the book that, you know, money isn't always the most important thing, but let's be honest, it's important, right? We all have to pay our bills. We all want to have an adequate standard of living, particularly as you start to raise a family and move further on in life. So employers have to compensate their employees fairly, not just in terms of salary and bonus, but fringe benefit package. But I think even more importantly, giving them the resources to be successful. I talk a lot in the book, Bill, about the importance of firm training programs. Mm-hmm. And even if you're thinking about leaving or going somewhere else, make sure you understand what kind of investment they're going to be making in you to train and develop your skills. So there's a whole bunch of factors at work there, but I think they're all equally important. And of course, culture, I'll conclude with that. Nobody wants to work for a firm or an organization that doesn't have a strong culture that's focused on the employees. So that's top of mind. I know with the firm that I'm working with, they get up every day thinking about how can we make this a world-class culture.
Nice. So this is no secret, obviously, to you. Our profession's facing a set of really unique challenges these days, given all the change and complexity in the world. And yet I've heard over and over again, many, many CPAs say that they believe that there has never been a better time to be entering this profession than right now. So I guess my question is, do you agree?
I do. Now, I'm a little biased. I was fortunate to have a really terrific career in this profession. It created many opportunities for me personally and professionally that I've enjoyed. But I feel like I could look any young person in the eye and tell them that those same opportunities I had are still there for you, right? Sure, the world is changing and evolving, and maybe the types of tasks and activities they'll be involved with during their career are going to be a little different than maybe what I experienced. But at the end of the day, the world needs accountants, right? They make our capital markets thrive. And when our capital markets thrive and capital gets allocated effectively, good things happen. New jobs get created, innovation happens, our quality of life improves. Accounts are at the intersection of that, and a smooth functioning capital market system drives a strong economy that benefits hundreds of millions of Americans. From a tax perspective, if you're a tax professional, you know, tax codes, whether they be federal, state, local, international, are important tools to drive public policy initiatives that, again, done well, can improve the quality of life. So if you're an auditor, an accountant, a tax professional, you're sitting at the center of some really important kind of core functions in our society. And then if you're an advisory professional, you know, the work is interesting, challenging. You're helping companies kind of improve the efficiency of how they operate. That's very interesting and rewarding work. So I think all aspects of our profession offer great opportunity. And as I talk about in the book, Bill, there's just so many ways you can leverage your accounting degree, right? There's public accounting, right? And within public accounting, there's the audit path, the tax path, the advisory path. If I want to go into private industry, I could be a CFO or a controller, or maybe an internal auditor or a forensic accountant. And then maybe I want to go work for the government or a nonprofit organization. Perhaps I choose a career in academia and I want to take a PhD track and become a tenured professional and impact young lives. Mm-hmm. And then what business or industry do you like? You know, I talk in the book about, I have a friend, he's a big sports fan and he particularly loves baseball. He wound up becoming the CFO of the Philadelphia Phillies, a job he loves. Every day he goes to work at Citizens Bank Ballpark. So what's not to like about that, right? So maybe your passion is technology or the music industry, but you can be an accountant. Like, every industry needs accountants. So it's just a wonderful career path.
It really is true. I mean, you know, no matter, I mean, like you said, every industry out there has an accounting function, right? I mean, you can apply your passion to this profession in almost any way you want to.
And I talk in the book about whether you're a global Fortune 500 company or you're the local dry cleaners or pizza shop on Main Street in the neighborhood, right? You need accountants, right? It might just be to help file your tax return, or it might be to file financial statements with the SEC, but you need accountants.
Yep. Well, Jerry, congratulations on the book. It sounds like a fantastic read, and I really appreciate your time, your insights, and for you to be here and share some of those with us today. So thanks.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Bill. Great talking to you, and thanks again for having me.
Good stuff there this week from Jerry McGinnis. Jerry is a former managing partner at KPMG's Philadelphia office, now an executive in residence, who supports the accounting program at Rowan University in New Jersey, where he helps prepare students for their transition from academia into the workforce. Jerry's new book is called Advice for a Successful Career in the Accounting Profession: How to Make Your Assets Greatly Exceed Your Liabilities. You will find it on Amazon and pretty much also wherever else you get your books. And you can find out more about Jerry himself at linktree.com/Jerry McGinnis. Gonna spell this one out for you, okay? It's a little weird. It's linktr.ee/Jerry McGinnis. And that's spelled JerryMagninnis. Hope you had a pen ready. Hope you got that down. You can always rewind and, you know, listen to it again, because this is not live. And what else? What else we got for you? Don't forget. Oh, yeah. This week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. Here we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. How to enunciate might be one of those future-ready skills that you need. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. And that is it, gang, for this week. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care.